You're listening to the Hamilton Today podcast from 900 CHML.
I've been meaning to talk to Arl Brown about this, but we always get sidetracked in other fascinating discussions and such. But we've seen a couple of times prisoner of war swaps back and forth, trade for trade between the Russian and Ukraine officials. What does this mean? How does this fit into this, war that has been just a grinder and been dragging out forever? Arl Brown with us, Professor of International Relations, Senior Member of the Monk School of Global Affairs, University of Toronto, here now. Arl, thank you for the time. Hope you're well.
Thank you.
So what can you tell us about these prisoner of war swaps? Why is this happening? And is this a positive sign?
It is a positive sign in a number of ways. It first of all means that Russia is treating these prisoners as prisoners of war rather than hostages, so not engaging the kind of psychological torture that Hamas is engaging in with the hostages that they have kidnapped. Hmm. It also tells us that the Ukrainians have been very successful in capturing large numbers of important Russian officers and soldiers, and the Kremlin wants them back, and this is why they are doing these trades. They are doing it not because it's their preference, but because it's in their interest.
So it's a bargaining tool for each side?
It is, and it is noteworthy that among the 207 prisoners that Ukraine got back, there were people who had been captured at the Mariupol Iron and Steelworks in Azovstal, and at one point, Russia was trying to claim that these were just neo-Nazis, but they wound up having to treat them as prisoners of war because they just lost too many captured by the Ukrainians as the Russian offensive has failed. So it's an indication of some degree of realism on the part of the Kremlin and also on the effectiveness of Ukraine's ability to continue this fight, even though we know that the counteroffensive that was expected in many quarters, especially in the West, would bring back to Ukraine huge territories, has not materialized, at least not yet. We should take this into the larger perspective of the fact that wars take different kinds of turns. And obviously, Ukraine is in a difficult situation, but not a hopeless one.
Does this change the discussion? Does it change the tone? Because clearly, they're at least talking if they're exchanging prisoners.
It is rather limited, so I don't want to exaggerate the importance of this. This is done out of necessity, not as part right. of a larger picture where the Russians realistically want to come to some solution, because it still appears that Vladimir Putin works under the belief that time is on his side, that somehow the West will lose interest, that they are not going to deliver to Ukraine the weapons that they need. There's a very important meeting of the EU tomorrow about funds for Ukraine that have been held up largely because of Hungarian objection. We will have to see what Hungary does and what kind of concessions Viktor Orban will try to extract from the EU. After all, he can look to Turkey, which had been extraordinarily successful in blackmailing NATO into all sorts of concessions for agreeing to finally allow Sweden in. And we still have to have Hungary sign onto it, but Turkey was the big player, and they were absolutely ruthless, the Erdogan regime, in squeezing NATO.
This, and I'm oversimplifying this, of course, Arl, but this reminds me of playing a game and you get to a point where you just go, okay, let's hit reset and start over. Is that what this is? Is this a reset?
I wouldn't go that far. I mean, there are positive elements to it, but these are relatively small numbers. There are thousands of prisoners
right.
on each side. It is sort of a straw in the wind that maybe will sort of be something they can build on. But I think the conflict continues unabated, and so are Russian ambitions. And unless the West comes together and we deliver to Ukraine what they need, and they can take the offensive in an effective way in the future, it's very difficult to see Vladimir Putin coming to any kind of settlement, not as long as he's persuaded that eventually time will work to his advantage, and he is not particularly concerned about not only the civilian losses in Ukraine, but the losses of Russian soldiers. I mean, whatever small advances that the Russians have made in Luhansk and elsewhere have come at an absolutely horrific cost to Russian soldiers.
When you look at this and where we are at this stage, many thought it would never go on this long. Is there still, or what is the support like for each leader? Let's start with Zelensky. Zelensky, does he still have the support of Ukrainians?
The last opinion polls indicate that he still has very strong support, but not as strong as before. And there are some issues. There have been rumors floating around that Zelensky is going to fire the commander-in-chief of the Ukrainian forces because there's dissatisfaction with the counteroffensive that had been attempted for months. The Ukrainian papers are saying that there's very strong support within the military for the commander of the military forces, and that the soldiers want the politicians to stay out. So there are tensions. We know that the mayor of Kyiv, who has been a political rival, has attacked Zelensky. But this is a democracy, and democracies tend to be rather messy. Now, in the case of Vladimir Putin, you can't really measure the support because people are very scared. They're not going to be honest with the pollsters. He's right. Facing an election in March, and the results already have been predetermined because this is a sure thing. But there have been certain protests. Some wives and mothers have, at tremendous risk to themselves, protested against the military. There's widespread draft evasion. So I suspect there is an erosion of support, but not enough that it has persuaded Vladimir Putin to change course. He's still confident at one level. And at another level, there's also some kind of desperation because he has no choice. He can't just admit defeat, and he's not going to leave office and retire.
I've only got a few seconds left. How has your opinion of this conflict changed from the beginning to where we are now? Has it?
At the beginning, I must say I was very concerned that Ukraine could not hold out, because even though it was quite remarkable that they survived the first few days, there was such overwhelming force that Russia was applying, and sometimes quantity prevails over quality. But the West began to provide Ukraine with some help, and the extraordinary determination of the Ukrainians has been nothing short of remarkable. And when we look at this conflict now, about to enter 2 years, I think it tells us that Russia's strategic miscalculation has been absolutely profound, and that if the West stays the course, Russia will lose.
Arl Brown with us, Professor of International Relations, Senior Member of the Monk School of Global Affairs at the University of Toronto. Arl, always fascinating. Thanks so much for the time. Be well.
Thank you for having me on.
Thanks for listening to the Hamilton Today podcast. You can listen to the show live weekday afternoons from 3 to 6 on 900 CHML and online at 900CHML.com.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his six-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his two-year-old at the rink.
All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone, like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.